We just wanted to take some time to say a massive thank you to Podcorn, who is our sponsor for this episode. Podcorn is the easiest way for brands and podcasters to connect. It simplifies every aspect of podcast sponsorships. We have had such an easy and straightforward experience with them so far. You literally just simply sign up, view a dashboard of amazing advertising opportunities, and then you can write and submit a pitch and wait for the reply from a brand that you love. It's that easy to start monetizing your own podcast with sponsorships that work for your podcast. It's totally in your control and gives you full creative freedom and transparency. It's also suitable for podcasts of all shapes and sizes, which we think is amazing because obviously we're only starting off. So join Podcorn today. Just visit podcorn.com. That is Podcorn, P-O-D-C-O-R-N. Warning, the following podcast may contain descriptions that some listeners may find distressing. Listener discretion is advised. Any views are all our own and do not in any way reflect the places where we work.
Welcome to Mad or Bad.
My name's Rachel.
And I'm Neil.
And today we bring you the case of the Scissor Sisters and the death of Farah Swally Noir, which is possibly one of Ireland's most brutal murder cases in recent history. I honestly can't believe this happened only a couple of hours away from where I grew up. It's kind of surreal in a way to think that such evil and brutal people can live actually so close to you. To be honest, the victim, and I use that term very loosely, was, to put it plainly, a piece of crap himself. He was not a nice individual. So I don't really have any pity for him in terms of actually how he met his demise. However, the story itself is not for the faint-hearted, so we have warned you. So let's begin right at the centre of things. In March of 2005, a passerby noticed what turned out to be a lower limb with a sock on, floating in Dublin's Royal Canal. For those who know the area, it's close to Croke Park in Dublin City. It's a really busy area, actually, with lots of people walking up and down the canal at all different times of the day.
So it was gonna be seen.
It was gonna be seen. I don't know why they even thought that was like a good place to.
Okay, they left the sock
hide
on.
A body. But apparently, it was quite close to where they live, so I think it was just more convenience than anything. So the police in Ireland, as we've kind of already discussed this in previous episodes, they're known as the Guards or Gardaí. I'll probably just end up saying the police just because I'm used to saying that now that we live in England. So the police quickly attended the scene and soon find the remains of a male in the canal. However, the head and genitalia were missing.
Sweet Jesus!
Initially, police thought the body to be that of a Caucasian male, as the water had actually caused his skin to become bleached. And it was actually at the point of literally sliding off the internal structures, which is vile. A name on that, and I can't remember what it's called, but yeah, that is gross.
Skin slide. No, just making it up. I don't know. I've no idea.
I don't know either. So the remains were taken for post-mortem, and quickly it became evident that they were of African descent. Police attempts to identify the body were successful. A friend of the victim came forward having recognised the clothing he was wearing. The victim was identified as 38-year-old Farah Swally Noir, a Kenyan native who had come to Ireland in 1996. He initially came to Ireland on the pretense that he was a Somalian called Shalila Salim, whose family had been killed in Mogadishu. However, further investigations revealed he was actually from Kenya. The Department of Justice, Equality and Law Reform ordered that he be deported, but he actually ended up appealing this and was granted citizenship in March 1999 on the grounds that he had a child who was Irish born.
So he was able to stay.
Yeah.
He probably wished he was deported now, as we'll see, but we'll go on.
Tough shit.
So as Rachel's just said, he was not a nice individual by any means, and he was known to be a very violent and abusive man towards women. He, by the time of his
demise,
he had four previous convictions for offences including intoxication, threatening and abusive behaviour and assault. In 1997, he raped a mentally disabled or
I don't know, a
lady with learning difficulties. Yeah.
A 16-year-old, so not a lady, a child.
Yeah, 16-year-old Chinese girl. She later gave birth to the son. I wonder if, was this the son that...
I think it was the
enabled
son.
Him to... So he raped someone, and then because he raped someone and fathered the child, after raping someone, he was allowed to stay.
Yeah, because he'd fathered an Irish-born child.
I mean, we won't get into
who
the
made
old...
that decision, yeah. Or whatever.
Crazy, isn't it?
Cray-cray.
So this girl, she later gave birth to a son. Two other women had children by him as well. Ah, so...
Basically fathering all around Dublin.
Okay, yeah. So the other two women who had children with him as well, they both described as having been raped by him. So it could have been one of those children as well that made him
clearly
stay.
Not a fan of birth control either.
No, well, he just, yeah, scumbag, isn't he? I mean, even if we didn't go on any further, but we will. We're duty bound to. He treated women as objects rather than human beings. He was obsessed with knives, apparently, and used to keep them on his person.
He's a lovely individual. Yeah.
He isn't he? He had previously used his knives in domestic altercations with women. He was so violent that a barring order was placed against him in 2003 by an ex-partner. Noor had faced 8 charges of disorder and assault, one involving a sexual assault in which a knife was found at the scene by the police. He was convicted on 3 occasions but never served time in jail. Noor lived in a number of, I think I just pronounced that differently, Noor lived in a number of areas in Dublin, including Dunleary and Fairhouse. I say that, as well as the inner city before moving in with Kathleen Mulhall.
I'm quite impressed with your pronunciation of Dunleary, actually. How did you know how to say
it? Thank you, I don't know. Kathleen herself had experienced a chaotic life, and it is reported that the Mulhall household was full of abuse. Domestic, alcohol and drug abuse were rife. Kathleen moved Noir, see I'm saying it again differently again, into the family home when she was still married to John Mulhall. The relationship between Kathleen and John had been reported as being abusive in itself, and it seems Kathleen was drawn to this type of relationship, as the relationship between her and Noir was nothing different. Mm. The relationship was apparently volatile between her and Noir. She claimed after the death that she had attended hospital several times due to broken wrists and fingers. Obviously, the fact that Kathleen moved Noir into the family home whilst her husband John was still residing there, obviously, caused huge friction.
surprise.
As it would, wouldn't it? John did move out and brought some of the children with him. Kathleen and Noir then lived for some time in the family home before moving down to Cork together to start a new life in a new area.
I wonder in Cork they lived, but I couldn't find it anywhere, because that would be interesting whether they... I presume it was Cork City, you know, someplace, but...
Yeah, that's...
Down the road from me, you know, at that time, really.
Probably not. I don't think they'd have frequented that area, would they?
What, Watergrass Hill?
Yeah, I don't
think so.
It's too exclusive.
It's so exclusive. What are you talking about?
So at this point, John, so he's still married to Kathleen at this minute, moved back into the family home and became the main parent again for the children. Because obviously Noir and Kathleen's cleared off to Cork. Eventually, Kathleen and Noir did move back to Dublin, where they resided in...
Talla.
There you go.
Talla's quite a working class area.
Is it?
Quite poor, yeah. Mm. There's kind of nicer parts, as all, you know, as there is with any areas, but...
Obviously, a working class area is not necessarily...
There's a lot of stabbings and stuff around there as well. That's not the safest of areas, no. So both children, Linda and Charlotte, experienced a very chaotic and tragic upbringing, as we've kind of already discussed, where both parents were involved in domestic abuse, alcohol and drug abuse. They both essentially went on to follow in their mum's footsteps.
So Linda and Charlotte are kids of Kathleen, yeah?
And John.
And
yes.
John, yeah.
So in 2005, Linda Mulhall was 30 years old. She was unemployed, had left school early and had 4 children. Locals report Linda being a good mother who tried her best for her children despite difficult circumstances. The relationship with the father of her children broke up and she got into another relationship with an individual called Wayne Kinsella, who subsequently abused them.
Jesus.
In one case, beating the children with an electrical flex.
It's awful, isn't it?
The abuse was later investigated and the children were taken into care by the social services, or social care as it's known now, while Wayne served a 6-year prison sentence for his cruelty to those children. Wayne himself had an extremely violent history, having been thrown out of school for violent behaviour, according to his elder sister, Donna. In a 2013 RTE radio interview, Donna, the sister, said that her brother Wayne was always an extremely violent person, even during his childhood, and stated that he used to beat members of his own family, including his parents, and had broken her jaw on one occasion. In May 1996, Wayne received an 8-year prison sentence for the murder of a retired auctioneer who was killed while visiting his wife's grave in Glasnevin Cemetery in Dublin on the 23rd of September 1995.
So this sounds like a right piece of shit.
In May 2012, Kinsella was jailed for life after being found guilty of the murder of a 29-year-old Dubliner who was stabbed to death in a field near Tyrrellstown on the 6th of January 2011. Kinsella claimed he murdered this person because he believed that he had been involved in the killing of his younger brother, but God only knows what actually, really went down there. Wayne's sister Donna said that this man had nothing to do with the brother's death whatsoever. So back to Linda. Meanwhile, she had a history of alcohol abuse. This was ongoing for years and years and years, and unfortunately suffered from an addiction to heroin as well. At one point, Linda was abusing 3 bottles of vodka a day, and she had one previous conviction in 1993 for larceny.
So 3 bottles of vodka a day, that's some serious...
There's a lot going on with her, isn't there, to be fair.
Yeah. What's your views, Rachel, on alcoholism? You know, personally, I think it's an illness, you know.
That's a really difficult thing to answer. I think it just depends on the person. I think there's people who... use it to self-medicate and you know, that's really sad because obviously they're experiencing a lot of distress and alcohol is a way of making their day a bit easier, isn't it?
I don't know. I mean, like you say, it's a bit of an open-ended, difficult to answer question. I realise that, but I suppose if you're needing
it is because
3 bottles, just talking about...
And that's being like physically dependent as well, isn't it, though?
Yeah, which you need it, of course, or you get the withdrawal symptoms.
Like, there's always a choice as well as to whether... like, because at some point you started using that, and there was always a choice whether you choose to do that or not. But it's not that clear, is it? Like, it's never that simple.
If things are that difficult...
Yeah, it's just like...
Then...
Everyone's different, though, and I don't know.
Yeah, it's a... Yeah, interesting.
I could never be an alcoholic myself. Like, that wouldn't be what I would choose to use.
Well, who knows,
makes you feel sick.
yeah, but...
I just... Yeah.
It's hard, isn't it? It's a difficult...
It is hard, yeah. So, just talking about Charlotte a little bit, the other sister. So, Charlotte Mulhall was 21 years old in 2005. Like her sister, you know, there's a history of drug and alcohol abuse as well with her. And she had a number of previous kind of minor convictions for criminal damage, public order offences, and was charged with criminal damage and given the Probation Act in October 2005. And she was also involved in prostitution as well.
Or sex working.
Yeah, we shouldn't say prostitution, should we?
No.
She was a sex worker.
Yeah. So, to the day in question, it was mid-March 2005. Kathleen Noir, Charlotte and Linda all decided to go out drinking on the streets of Dublin. Like, literally on the streets of Dublin, not like
so
in the bars. Yeah, I mean, I did that when I was about 15. Not on the streets of Dublin, you understand.
You just imagine them walking up and down, can't you, with like bottles
and
like brown paper bags over their bottles.
Having a right good day at.
They probably weren't allowed in anywhere. Who'd have them?
Possibly, or maybe it was a cost. You know, it's cheaper, isn't it, buying
you,
I guess.
Yeah.
Noir apparently bought vodka and Kathleen purchased Coca-Cola, which they drank as they walked around the city before stopping on the River Liffey boardwalk where Charlotte and her mother took ecstasy tablets.
So what a great mum.
It gets better. Well, it's easy to...
That's too ecstasy with my kids.
I know, but it...
I know, come on, fucking hell.
Well, no, yeah, absolutely, but things are so distorted, aren't they, in the trauma that she's
They're
had.
They're all just really screwed.
It's kind of... everything's skewed, isn't it?
Yeah,
so we're not trying
to... like, normality.
No, so we're not trying to have a right go at...
I don't think my Kathleen, mammy would do ecstasy with me, though.
She told me she's already on it. I'm joking. I'm joking, Mother, if you're listening.
Sorry, Mammy.
Does Mother listen?
She does.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
Love you.
So they're on the streets, they're getting pissed and taking ecstasy. They then return to Kathleen Mulhall's flat, where the daughters took ecstasy then as well. Kathleen Mulhall crushed a tablet into Noir's drink, so they were all on the same buzz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Apparently he'd been in a bad mood that day.
Sounds like he's always in a bad mood.
Sounds like a right piece of shit, doesn't he? Yeah. Lynn and Noir were sitting on a two-seater couch, settee as I would say, with Charlotte sitting on the arm when Noir started touching Lynn in a sexual way. I'm not sure what that sexual way was.
Well, you know, he's probably trying to go for her tits or something.
Was he stroking her breast or... who knows?
Neil.
What?
That's assault, like.
I'm not... advocating
that. You're making fun of it.
I'm not at all. I'm saying, was he stroking her breast?
I don't know, but he probably was.
Yeah. It's kind of like his, like we've already said, he saw them as objects,
well,
didn't
basically,
he?
Basically, he thinks he owns everyone, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, piece of shit. So, he spoke into her ear, put her arms around her waist and refused to let her go.
We just wanted to take some time to say a massive thank you to Podcorn, who is our sponsor for this episode. Podcorn is the easiest way for brands and podcasters to connect. It simplifies every aspect of podcast sponsorships. We have had such an easy and straightforward experience with them so far. You literally just simply sign up, view a dashboard of amazing advertising opportunities, and then you can write and submit a pitch and wait for the reply from a brand that you love. It's that easy to start monetizing your own podcast with sponsorships that work for your podcast. It's totally in your control and gives you full creative freedom and transparency. It's also suitable for podcasts of all shapes and sizes, which we think is amazing because obviously we're only starting off. So join Podcorn today. Just visit podcorn.com. That is Podcorn, P-O-D-C-O-R-N.
Kathleen then started screaming at him and a verbal altercation took place where Kathleen Mulhall was alleged to have instructed them to just kill him for me. Some reports do suggest that Kathleen, you know, said that he's going to kill me as Noir had become violent towards Kathleen. Charlotte picked up a Stanley knife and struck Noir across the throat, inflicting a wound that sent him to the ground. Noir managed to crawl to the bedroom, where he then hit his head on the ground. I think he hit it on a...
he hit it off the bunk bed.
On a bed, yeah. Fell unconscious onto the floor. So he's unconscious, he's bleeding from the neck. So at this stage, Linda picked up a hammer, hit him on the head a number of times. The mother.
Where they were getting all these instruments from?
Maybe they were
doing. Just all lined up, waiting to go, weren't they?
DRI, like a DRI. That's DRI. An old hospital in Derby.
Yeah, I don't think
DRI. Good. You see, I'm so good at DRI, Rachel, that I don't even know the fucking.
We all know I'm the DIY.
Well,
person,
I
and
so.
I'll teach you. Don't worry.
I'm the DIY person, and you're like the assistant.
I'm the manager.
You're the assistant. What? It says does note. That's a joke. So the mother, so Kathleen, she kind of looked on but didn't participate as far as, you know, reports are there. So Noir was stabbed at least 27 times. It could have been more, but pathologists had no opportunity to examine the full body. Because obviously, you
Dick
know...
Dick and his head were missing.
Well, he went for a swim, didn't he? In the,
he did go for a swim, bless.
In the Liffish. Oh, I did.
Oh my god, people will come after you if I keep that in. Linda and Charlotte then dragged Noir's corpse into the bathroom where they began to dismember his remains. Noir's head, limbs and penis were severed using a kitchen knife and a hammer.
What about his testes?
I don't know. Supposedly, the girls decided to dismember Noir's genitalia as they and Kathleen had been previously raped by him on occasions, and maybe this was a way of kind of asserting that he would never be able to do it again, even though, well, he was clearly dead, so he was definitely never going to be able to do it again.
Is there any evidence? Oh, it's hard to get the evidence, isn't it? But they said that, though, that they'd been raped by him as well.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. Right piece of shit, aren't
they? Yeah. So they put towels over his legs to stem the flow of blood. The crime scene must have been absolutely saturated with blood, though, according to the coroner, Noir would have lost about 6 pints of blood, which obviously had to go somewhere. The scene was described as a bloodbath, with both Linda and Charlotte attempting to flush pieces of flesh down the toilet and washing away the blood down the sink of the shower. The dismemberment took a number of hours, and the body parts were placed in black plastic bags and a sports bag before being disposed of in the Royal Canal. This took the women several trips. So they decided not to throw the head away with the other remains to prevent identification. The head was brought in a rucksack by bus to Tella, where they walked through the square shopping centre to Tymon North Park. They walked to where Charlotte dug a hole with a knife to bury the head. So while in this park, the girls started fighting about where to bury the head, and according to reports, they quickly buried it behind a bench, but that it was in quite a shallow grave and could potentially be seen by passers-by. Some reports suggest it was Sean Walsh Memorial Park. However, I'm unclear as to whether it's the same park or not. Either way, it was in a park, basically. I'm not from Dublin, so if anyone, you know, knows, do let us know if it's the same place.
So, I wonder if at this stage it was kind of like really panic. I suppose it must have been panicking.
Yes. Can you imagine, though, walking through Dublin City with a head in a rucksack?
Dublin's...
on your back.
Yeah.
That's mad, isn't it? Imagine all the people that came across them doing it.
Yeah, I'll never look at people. You know, they've got like a bag on the back. I'll be thinking. Yeah, but obviously, I wonder if they was kind of pissed and things like this at this stage.
They were drunk.
They're not kind of really concentrating.
Well, they were on E and everything. I mean, they were just chaotic, weren't they?
Yeah. Kathleen Mulhall threw the knives and the hammer into a nearby pond, so that got rid of all the implements. A number of days later, Linda Mulhall allegedly returned to the park and dug up the head, worried that it would be seen by passers-by. You got like a dog digging it up or something, wouldn't you?
Oh my God, yeah.
Can you imagine? And running off with it.
Well, apparently one member of the public did actually think he saw a head there, but by the time he told the police...
Yeah, I saw that on the documentary, yeah.
There was nothing there.
Yeah, because she'd been back and removed it.
Yeah.
Sweet
Jesus. So
that was
actually quite close, actually.
Jesus, Joseph and Mary.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
Using her son's school bag, she transferred it to a field in the Kilarden estate, Tala, where she broke it up with a hammer before burying it again.
Fuck.
It's a bit labour-intensive, isn't it, this head?
I've never tried to beat a head up with a hammer, so I can't tell you.
No.
I'd imagine it's quite difficult. A lot of bones.
Yeah, could do with a... I've not, you know, obviously give it too much thought, but like a big, like... What do you call it?
A mallet?
Like a mincer upper.
Oof.
Yeah.
You couldn't fit a head in a mince machine though.
I don't know. You could wedge it in maybe.
I don't think so.
Well,
make a sausage out of it.
I suppose. Yeah, we'll look into it.
Let you know.
Yeah. So, other reports suggest she brought it into a mountainous area, so just kind of on the outskirts of Dublin. Either way, it has never been found to this day. So, if you're in the Dublin area. Look out for a head.
Maybe it's in the Wicklow Mountains. I don't know.
Well, who knows? God
it's
knows.
It's not been found either way.
No. I wonder if a dog took it home somewhere. we don't know, do we? The girls then returned to their home to clean up the crime scene. As this was Noir's apartment, it was important to make sure that there was not a speck of blood left as evidence, as this would obviously be the first place police would look if Noir was reported missing. The two girls proceeded to forensically clean the bathroom and other rooms using bleach to destroy any evidence. And I think they did quite a good job, didn't they, apparently?
Yeah, not bad, considering the amount of blood that was there, I think. And the fact that he was in different rooms, like he was first in the lounge,
and then he crawled into the bedroom,
and then they dragged him into the bathroom. So there was literally blood. Like, it
and
must
then they
have
would
been
going from room to room as well, with bits on them and stuff like that.
It must have been so messy.
Yeah. After all was said and done, Kathleen and Charlotte went to Holyhead and enjoyed some shopping and drinking. It later transpired that Linda didn't go, as she had miscarried a pregnancy in the meantime and mentally was not doing very well. As days had passed, the leg had been found in the Royal Canal, as mentioned before. Charlotte and Kathleen kept a close eye on the news to see if Noir had yet to be identified, and apparently were on the bridge watching when Noir's remains had been removed.
Well, there's actually evidence of this.
Does it show you in the documentary?
I think it's art. Was it the news or like there was a picture taken or something? And they are actually there watching as like the limbs are coming out.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Because they're probably really sweating now, aren't they? Because they're probably thinking...
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So, Linda, she continued to really struggle with the guilt of all that had taken place.
So the police were very much at the beginning of inquiries and believed this may be a ritual killing due to it being a black male with a severed head and genitals. At the time, there had been another very high-profile case in the news called The Torso in the Thames.
I vaguely remember that. Was that the...
I think it was a young boy.
Torso in the what?
In the Thames.
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 Yeah.
I don't know how to say it. Yeah. Thames.
Yeah, it was a young boy, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think
so. Yeah.
So police interacted with the Ritual Killings Unit in South Africa. However, they were unsure as to whether this really was a killing by ritual. That is about the same time that Noir's friend came forward to identify him based on the clothes that he was wearing.
I think he had an Ireland football shirt. Yeah.
So police took DNA from one of Noir's children residing in Dublin, and this was actually a match to the remains. So the police had basically positively identified the remains. As a result of this, the police were able to identify that Noir had been in the company of the Mulhall sisters as well as their mother, Kathleen. I think it was the friend who had tipped the police off as regarding this. This proved to be obviously very significant and led the police to treating all three women as suspects in the murder. So the sisters and their mum were arrested in August, but denied any knowledge of the killing. A number of weeks later, Linda contacted the investigating officers, admitting her involvement.
Because she was feeling particularly guilty and stuff,
yes,
wasn't she?
And I think she just couldn't deal with it anymore. So Gardaí took a voluntary statement from her at her home in Tala in August 2005. When Gardaí searched the Mulhall flat in Summerhill, they found bloodstains that were later confirmed to match his DNA. It transpired that the girls did a very good job of cleaning up the blood, and actually since then, there had been two separate tenants in the house, and the house had been like repainted, recarpeted. However, the police used luminol and uncovered bloodstains under the bed and in the floorboards. So after Linda's confession, Kathleen Mulhall fled the country in September 2005, and Gardaí were unable to locate her until January 2008. She was living in England.
It gets me, though. You know, sometimes when you hear about, like, a couple of things. So Noir, he was, you know, he had enough money to, obviously, he had his own place, but, you know, drugs, yeah, drink, presumably food.
Yeah.
You know, how do these people live? And it's like Kathleen, she took off for 2.5 years living in England. I mean, how do these people live?
Where do they even get the
money? How do they finance
it? I don't think any of them were working.
No, they probably
hadn't. They were all probably just drawing the dole and...
Yeah, but she just moved from Ireland to England for 2.5 years and...
As you do.
Anyway, we don't know. But it always gets me. How do these people live?
I know, where I'm literally counting my pennies until...
Well, a lot of people are, aren't they? A lot of people are.
What are we doing wrong?
Well...
We need to take more ecstasy.
No, God. I'm high on life as it is.
Are you?
No. So, Linda and Charlotte were both charged with murder and pleaded not guilty in the Central Criminal Court. In Dublin's first city. The trial took place...
Which confuses me because she basically admitted to it, so I don't know why she pleaded not guilty. I don't know how that works.
Ah, Linda did, didn't she?
Yeah.
Well, she admitted involvement, didn't she? But... Because of the voluntary statement. But at that time, she probably didn't have any legal representation, you see.
Yeah.
So then by this time, she's thinking probably, oh, shit.
Actually, I'll just
she
say
probably
I
feels guilty,
anything.
But hang on, the guilt versus
yeah
20 years in prison or whatever, kind of...
I think I'll say I didn't do it.
Might erode the guilt a bit. So the trial took place in October 2006 with Linda Mulhall being found guilty of manslaughter, while her sister Charlotte was found guilty of the murder of Noir. Linda's jury accepted a defence of provocation. Charlotte Mulhall was given the mandatory life sentence and Linda Mulhall was given a 15-year sentence for manslaughter.
I like how you say mandatory. You say mandatory.
Did I?
It's nice.
Oh.
Sounds good.
I think you may have. The judge argued... I'll use that in my everyday life.
Yes.
Just to give me a boost.
Yeah.
The judge argued that Linda, a heroin addict, had initially tried to halt the trial by refusing to take methadone. Leave to appeal was refused for both sentences. Linda Mulhall appealed the severity of a sentence on the grounds that it was passed without psychiatric and probation reports. This appeal failed, with the Court of Criminal Appeal finding the sentence to be appropriate, so it was upheld. Charlotte Mulhall requested leave to appeal a conviction on the grounds that Justice Carney had put pressure on the jury to reach a verdict, even though the foreman had indicated they were deadlocked.
You know what? And on the Irish news, it's always Justice Carney. I feel like he's the only judge in Ireland.
Anyone there? He's earning some money, isn't he?
Like, it's always, you know his name.
He's
like,
just permanently in the court. He just lives sleeps there.
He loves it. He's loving life.
He is, isn't he? Jesus. It's his life's work, just continually doing that.
Weird.
So this failed on the grounds that the defence did not raise objections to the comments during the trial and the fact the jury was not affected by any alleged undue pressure to reach a verdict. Kathleen Mulhall voluntarily, returned to Ireland in Feb 2008 and was charged with, among other offences, two counts of giving false information to the Irish police about Noir's whereabouts and withholding information which she knew or believed would be of assistance in prosecuting her daughters for Noir's murder. She was also charged with impeding an arrest in the murder investigation. She pleaded guilty to helping to clean up the crime scene in order to conceal evidence. So eventually, Kathleen Mulhall was sentenced to 5 years in prison in May 2009.
I mean, she only came home because she knew that she'd be... Is it extradited? Is that the right word?
Yeah.
So she was like, I might as well just bloody go home because I'm going to be found out anyway. They eventually found her, like...
Well, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Because... I mean, you don't look good that she cleared off for 2.5 years, like, but she's,
Strangely enough, the tragedy did actually not end there. The girl's father, John, remember him, the poor lad that was outed from his own home. Well, he wasn't a poor lad. He was actually a piece of shit himself as well, because he was quite abusive. But he ended up actually hanging himself in Phoenix Park when his daughters were charged with the killing.
Jesus.
So I think this was in December 2005. He was not believed to have been involved in the killing at all, but for some reason or another, he decided to hang himself. Linda turned to alcohol and slashed her arms, causing her to spend over a week in a psychiatric hospital. In April 2009, she claimed to fellow inmates that she had in fact smashed Nora's head and distributed the fragments in rubbish bins in the Phoenix Park. There's so many different stories about where it is, and they've never found any of it, and I just, whatever, I don't know. I don't think she's willing to really tell the truth about it. The first disclosure of where his head had ended up was referred to as the final secret of the Scissor Sisters. Charlotte caused a further national controversy in 2008 when photographs of her holding a knife to the throat of a male prisoner in Mountjoy were leaked to the press. As a result, security in Irish prisons was increased and Charlotte was moved to another prison in Limerick. The girl's brother James pleaded guilty to the robbery of two prostitutes as well, claiming he robbed the women to support his own six children. Maybe just don't have six children then. And his sister Linda's four children, whom he had also taken on after she was jailed. So he was taking...
I have six children.
Children.
I have 15 children, but...
Take care of them.
Kind of take care of them, yeah. Take, you know, we're not saying don't have kids.
Fuck. So, yeah, I mean, what a crazy story. I just can't believe that's like an Irish story in itself.
I know, it's...
You don't get many like mad stories like that from Ireland. You just don't. It doesn't happen.
Well, there's not
often.
As many people live there, is there?
Well, I guess.
I suppose. So, hope you've enjoyed the story of the Scissor Sisters, not the band.
It sounds
are they still
sexual,
together?
Sexual, actually, Scissor Sisters.
Yeah, I know what
it's
you're
not
saying,
like a lesbian thing.
I don't know, love.
I don't know whether they were involved in that together, but...
No, I think it was just scissoring a body up,
they were scissoring things
I don't
up.
Think the Irish press kind of, you know...
They didn't think too much about it. But yeah, and I don't know whether Scissor Sisters, the band, to answer your question, are still together.
No, I
mean...
They
had that dancing song, didn't they?
I'm not really...
I don't feel like dancing.
I mean, the crap, in my humble opinion, but... It was in there. It was like Jake Shears, wasn't it? And Animatronic or something.
Oh my God, how do you even know those names?
Big fan.
Jesus.
I modelled myself on that Jake Shears. Man, effing hero.
But anyways, we hope you enjoyed
Jake
the episode.
Shears.
And we shall see you in 2 weeks.
See you
time.
Soon. Thanks for listening.
Bye. As always, catch us on facebook.com/madorbad. You can catch us on Twitter. Our handle is @madorbadthepod. And also, we now have a Patreon account, so please go look us up. It is patreon.com/madorbad. You can access exclusive content. We have exclusive episodes only available to Patreon supporters. So go find us.